From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
There's nothing progressive about a 3% compounded raises for retirees and furloughs for today's workers. That's why I am for amending the clause added to the Constitution in 1970 as well, that caused the Supreme Court to shoot down our initial agreements with the labor and municipal employees.
Well, I can't speak to the constitutionality of it, but I can say that, you know, my commitment is to pay the pensions that are owed to people. Yeah, that's not something that I'm promoting in any way.
Bruce Rauner, in his final month as governor, revealed in an exclusive interview that he tried to convince two men and two women to run in his place this election cycle.
You recruited four people to run for what would have been your second term.
That's correct. Yep. And I said, I'll step aside. I'll give you huge financial resources. You run for governor. I'll support you. You have as good or better chance to get elected than me. All four of them said no. Too tough, too unlikely, too difficult.
I was not surprised by this. I actually felt like his heart was not into the race. Rauner cheated Republicans and voters who wanted a different choice than Pritzker. And he basically threw the election to the Democrats without a fight.
Well, turns out Bruce Rauner apparently having some questions of whether he could win re-election. Of course, he did not, losing to J.B. Pritzker here in the fall. And Rauner dropping that bombshell this week during an interview. We'll talk more about that. And also, Rahm Emanuel not going quietly, the mayor of Chicago, offering up some budget proposals for the city. We'll get into those as well. That and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also with us, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House Editor, and Daisy Contreras, IPR State House Reporter. Joining us today from Chicago is Heather Sharon. She's with the Daily Line as their Managing Editor and Chicago City Hall Reporter. And Heather, it's good to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'll start, Brian, with you, because we've been following, I guess, from a distance. This was Bruce Rauner's announcement being made during some interviews in the Chicago area of what he had to say. But it's not a shock to most people. It wasn't a shock to Jeannie Ives. We heard her there at the start of the show, who narrowly lost to Rauner in the primary for the Republican nomination, that Bruce Rauner, apparently his heart might not have been in a reelection bid.
Yeah, this is one of those things that's the least surprising actual bit of news, but it's surprising that somebody said it out loud. This was an interview with ABC, Channel 7 in Chicago, and he said that the governor said basically he thinks that since President Trump was elected, his chances for reelection were really going downhill, and he said he had a particularly good sense of that early in 2017. I would remind you that's still during the budget impasse. That's before the tax increase vote that happened that summer when more than a dozen Republicans defected from Governor Rauner's camp and helped Democrats pass a budget and the two-year stalemate and raise the income tax rate in Illinois. It also comes before his signing of some pro-abortion legislation for which conservatives were very critical of the governor. And it's a real mind bender that he's talking about this now, I guess. But as Representative Ives said, not really surprising to people who watched the campaign. And it just did not seem like he had his heart in it. He did not spend as much money as some people think he should have. And he also did not invest in other Republicans down the ticket, for which I think there's still going to be a reckoning in the party.
And as we recall, and we've spent entire shows analyzing this, Rauner faced a big problem with his own party. The division was obvious. Many, many conservative Republicans were unhappy with the governor, and many just wanted change. And Jeannie Ives represented that change for them. And former Republican State Senator Karen McConaughey said she was one of the women approached by Rauner to take his place. She retired from the legislature in September. And according to the Chicago Tribune, McConaughey said the governor's offer reflected the way he ran the state. And she said, and I quote, "He tried to take himself out the same way he came in. He never learned the job," some strong words.
Well, Charlie, he's blaming, in some case here, Donald Trump. And I'm sure Donald Trump's unpopularity in the state of Illinois probably did not help him in a re-election bid. At the same time, as was mentioned, he had his own baggage to deal with as well.
Yeah, I would say that I tend to agree with Senator McConaughey. He really didn't understand what the job was about. He didn't understand that, unlike Scott Walker, who had overwhelming Republican majorities in the Senate and the House in the state of Wisconsin and therefore could ram through an anti-union agenda, Rauner didn't have that. He had to deal with Democratic majorities. The Democratic Party supports organized labor, plain and simple. It never seemed to me that he was able to understand how the governor is supposed to work. This is not a top-down system where the governor gives orders and the lawmakers scramble to follow his will. He has to learn to negotiate with people. He did not have that. And as was alluded to, the fact that he supported legislation that was anathema to basic conservatives, that doomed him, I think, right then and there. And I would argue that it didn't matter who was the president, be it Trump, be it Hillary Clinton, be it, you know, the man in the moon. He was going to have a tough time getting reelected with his anti-union agenda and with his signature of legislation that was detested by conservatives.
And Heller, for a guy that didn't think he could actually pull this out and win, he still spent quite a bit of money.
That's true. And, you know, I think that the question of why he decided to reveal this now is just absolutely fascinating, because what it's going to do, I believe, is sort of fuel the intense sort of conflagration that's engulfing the Illinois Republican Party as they sort of figure out how to recover from losing every statewide office, losing, you know, a significant number of seats in the Illinois House and the Illinois Senate, and deciding sort of how they go forward. And I think, I think Jeannie Ives' remarks this morning were sort of an indication that she's going to sort of point to this as she urges her fellow Illinois Republicans to sort of turn their back on sort of the Rauner era of Illinois Republican politics and go in a different direction. You know, of course, the issue there is whether or not a more right-leaning Republican Party can really sort of win back any of those seats, which I think is a very much an open question.
And I guess, Brian, you did talk with Jeannie Ives. I don't know if she's, you know, discussing that yet at this point, what her role could possibly be going forward with the Republican Party, but I'm guessing she wants to be a part of it.
I asked her, you know, do you have any plans to run for another office or try and remain involved in party leadership or anything like that? She said she has no plans to run for office, but she does want to try and continue to influence the conversation in Illinois. So what role that takes, I think we will probably find out soon enough, but she wasn't saying just yet. I would like to say one other tidbit I thought was fascinating about this interview, and it goes back to the question of Rauner's governing style and his the way he thinks about government and what he learned or did not learn. He told Craig Wall, the ABC television reporter in Chicago, I learned that he was talking about House Speaker Michael Madigan. He said, quote, I learned that working with him directly won't get the result. He responds through his caucus. Pressure through his caucus is the way to get the speaker to move, which is fascinating because there was this other guy named Bruce Rauner who went around the state for 6 years saying how Michael Madigan controls everything in Illinois and, you know, he snaps his finger and people respond to him. So it's interesting to hear the governor say this, and it's, you know, yet another thing he said that is completely at odds with other past statements.
You know, another way to look at what he said too is in keeping with his whole administration where he didn't take responsibility for anything. So as was mentioned, the Republican Party is in disarray, but hey, it's not my fault. I tried to get somebody else to run when it looked like I was going to have a rough time and nobody wanted to do it. So don't blame me because the Republicans are in such bad shape.
Yeah, Charlie, I don't think Mike Madigan is an enigma that way. I think that we know, and just like him and just like others who have controlled these leadership posts in the General Assembly, yeah, pressure from their own caucus, from their own members, is going to move them on certain issues.
Oh, sure. One of the things that's been true of Madigan from day one in his leadership position, he has no ideological agenda. If he needs to be a liberal on something, he'll be liberal, if that's what's good for electing House Democrats. If being conservative, he'll be conservative. And there have been occasions in the past when he has responded to what his members say is important to them in their districts. I'm not going to go into the laundry list here, but there are a lot of examples of Madigan doing what he thinks is best to elect people back home.
Daisy, before we move on to other topics here, I want to touch on Rauner, and we'll certainly discuss him more in coming weeks before he leaves office. But this seems to me to sort of be, again, a somebody else was to blame situation that Rauner has used a lot. And that is, you know, I tried to get other people to do it. They didn't want to step up. I tried to save the party in some way by getting other people to step in. They didn't do it. And it seems to me to, again, be, you know, not taking as much responsibility here for this loss as maybe he should.
Yeah, and like Senator McConaughey and even Jeannie Ives said, you know, he doesn't take responsibility for his own choices. And even after he nearly lost the primary elections, he said, you know, I've heard you and, you know, we're going to work through this. But he never really took responsibility for that.
Well, we do know that while he'll be leaving office, Bruce Rauner, we also will see the end of the tenure of the Chicago mayor, Rahm Emanuel, also not going quietly. And Heather, this week, he also had quite a few proposals that he unveiled regarding the city's budget and some of its problems there. Can you run through those for us?
Well, essentially what's going to happen is starting in 2020, the city will have to foot a bill of nearly $270 million more to pay its pension funds. And the city budget that passed nearly unanimously in October did nothing to sort of tackle that looming cliff. Aldermen, I'm sure, were glad to be able to cast a relatively easy vote for a budget that included no tax hikes or fee increases, but that left this problem unaddressed. So the mayor promised he would give a big speech before the end of the year, and that's just what happened on Wednesday. And he proposed a four-pronged plan. One part of that is pressuring state lawmakers to approve a Chicago casino that he told both the Sun-Times, Tribune, and Crane's editorial boards that should be located on the southeast side of the city on Portland to draw those Indiana gamblers over the border. Two, a legalized marijuana and earmark those revenues for pension payments. Three, a change in the constitution of the state to allow basically a change in how retirees see their payments increase based on the cost of living. Right now, that's set at 3%. Mayor Emanuel said that was far too generous in an era where inflation is close to zero. And fourth, he urged the city council to approve a framework to allow the city to borrow up to $10 billion to start paying down that debt. So it was a wide-reaching plan, and some of it was more popular than other parts of it, for sure.
Is there anything among those parts that you think has the best chance of actually occurring? Because it seems as though it is a pretty ambitious package.
Right. I think probably the part of it that has the most possibility of actually happening, simply because it's in the city council's power to do so, is that $10 billion borrowing plan. I don't know that it's going to be an easy lift, but you know, there's going to be a lot of pressure on aldermen to take action to address this sort of looming pension cliff. And this is one way they can do it. And essentially, Mayor Emanuel likened it to refinancing your home mortgage. Let's say you're paying 10%. If you could get a deal to pay 7%, that's going to save you a lot of money over the long haul, and that's essentially what the mayor is recommending doing. Of course, there's a significant amount of risk in assuming that the interest rates are not going to rise above that initial rate, and they could certainly rise above the rate that the city is now paying. So it's going to be a heated debate, but there will be a lot of pressure from unions for the city to take action. The other three parts of the plan are almost entirely out of the city's control. The state legislature has to act on casinos. The state legislature would have to act on you know, changing the constitution. And J.B. Pritzker, we heard at the top of the show, did not sound very enthusiastic about that. And of course, he has supported legalized marijuana. How fast that could make its way through, I think, is also an open question.
And Charlie, when it comes to this pension discussion, borrowing money especially, that has come up as far as the state of Illinois and its pension debt is concerned. Could this be a trial balloon for something much bigger with the state's pension problems?
Well, the borrowing maybe, but certainly not changing the Constitution. I mean, in my opinion, doing away with the clause that says membership in a public employee retirement system is an enforceable contractual relationship, the benefits shall not be diminished nor impaired, you could do away with that, but that doesn't do anything for the obligation that is already there. And the Illinois Supreme Court unanimously said, whatever the terms were when you got hired, going forward, that's the terms that have to be there. And you can't undo what's already been done. And so to the extent that the city is on the hook for almost, what did Heather say, $300 million more for their...
Just in 2020, with almost an increase, you know, another $300 million by 2023.
Yeah, and that's under what the rules are now. And if you were to go back and read the debates at the Constitutional Convention, it was pretty clear that the intent of the delegates in putting this into the Constitution, and I would argue the intent of voters who approved it, was that you lock in those benefits. The concern at the time, and this is almost 50 years ago, was that at some future point, mayors faced with budget difficulties would decide not to pay the pensions of police and firefighters. And that was one of the big impetuses. There was also concern for university employees that they might be stiffed. And so this notion that, well, we can undo all those past promises just by taking this out of the Constitution, I don't think it would wash.
Well, and just to be clear, too, and for you know openness purposes here, we all of us except Heather on this panel are part of the State University retirement system. Now, Brian, we listened to a little bit of this discussion here about all the things that Emanuel wants. From your point of view, normally when the city of Chicago and the mayor of Chicago says let's do something, a lot of times the legislature's got open ears to that. But here's a guy who's a lame duck. He's leaving office. You think any of this will move them at all?
Well, he's not only a lame duck, but he's proposing things that sort of run, particularly in terms of the pension, run counter to the campaign that Pritzker just ran. Now, it may be that Pritzker, who has a lot of credibility with unions, could come in and be the one who proposes this tough medicine, but he has not given any indication that that's what he wants to do. So this is a big lift in the legislature. And the same thing with casinos. I mean, casinos, I can't remember a time since I've been down here that there has not been over a decade now, that there has not been discussion of expanding casino gambling in Illinois. But there are some concerns, and Pritzker has raised this point as well, about oversaturation and whether you can really get much revenue from that much more expansion. We've talked on this show about a report that came out from the legislature's budget analysts a couple months ago that says that there are enough video gaming terminals across the state to equal 24 land-based casinos now. So Illinois has already had a huge gambling expansion in the past few years through video gambling, as you can see in just about any, well, not in Chicago, but in many other places in the state. You go into any restaurant or even gas station, and you can now do some video gambling if you want to. So this is, it's an interesting strategy for the mayor. Maybe he feels freed up to speak some truths as he sees them. He has always been sort of a centrist, business community oriented Democrat, not a liberal flamethrower. But I do also, just to get back to the point Charlie was talking, if I can, about the constitutionality of this, I do think there are forces out there who think that if they can only get this before the U.S. Supreme Court somehow, by maybe targeting that contractual question, that maybe, because the Constitution means what it says it does until the top court in the land says it means something else. And I think that perhaps they can hope with, the confirmation of Kavanaugh, you now have a more solid 5-4 conservative majority on the U.S. Supreme Court. Perhaps that there would be some way to kind of wiggle out of these state constitutional obligations that frame this in contractual terms, because that does implicate a federal constitutional question. But
and
maybe that's getting a little into the weeds for today.
Yeah. Well, and certainly this problem is not just here in Illinois, so you're right. I think it does have a lot of national implications going forward and a lot of that discussion. Let me move on, though, to J.B. Pritzker, the governor-elect. He was out and about, a statewide thank you tour, he called it, traveling to a lot of cities, including both in the Chicago area, but also in downstate communities as well. One of the things that has come up recently has been the possibility of trying to quickly do something to create an infrastructure program, roads, bridges, things like that. And this week, the brakes, I guess, maybe put on this a little bit, at least by Pritzker. Daisy, he seemed to back off one of the ideas for funding this, which could be a gas tax increase.
That's right. And, you know, it's interesting, too. During the week, Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel and suburban mayors came together and called for a 20 to 30 cents a gallon increase in the state's gas tax to cover improvements for roads, bridges, and mass transits. So right now, the current gas tax is 19 cents a gallon, and it's been the same since 1990. So yeah, Pritzker didn't completely dismiss the possibility of a gas tax increase, but he said it's an issue that can't be rushed and that needs some thinking through. He said it will most likely take all 4 months of session probably, you know, next year to come up with a plan. There was rumors floating around that it was going to be something set up before he even took office or something in the first few weeks of office. But he's not as optimistic or enthusiastic to tackle the issue right away.
And Heather, don't you think a new governor coming in, maybe some goodwill as he comes in, people want to see what he can do, actually coming out and suddenly raising the tax that I pay on gasoline, you know, costing me more at the pump when I fill up, that's not necessarily going to put him in good graces with a lot of people?
It will absolutely be very controversial. And a gas tax is one of the most regressive taxes that the government can levy. And I think one of the big questions facing J.B. Pritzker that I know we at the Daily Line will be focused on is whether he can sort of keep the progressive wing of the Democrats with him, and does he sort of live up to his promises to be a much more progressive governor than either Governor Pat Quinn, the last Democratic governor, or Rod Blagojevich, who was governor before him, of course. And I think coming right out of the gate and sort of raising that gas tax, which will, of course, hurt more, you know, among communities of color, the poor communities, I think that would be a huge lift. And you know, I think that would, you know, I've heard people tell me that would set the wrong tone for a Pritzker administration immediately coming in and sort of focusing the need for additional revenue on the state's poorest residents.
And Charlie, I was going to just say real quick that the gas tax, people think about that and they think, oh, well, that's what I pay on when I, you know, on gasoline, that's all I pay. But you pay a lot of different fees. Mm-hmm. It is a complicated formula to get to, you know, what goes into the price you pay when you fill up your tank. And the gas tax is just one of those things. Gas prices could spike up because of other forces at play. It has the makings, I think, of being very politically unpopular.
Yeah, it is. But on the other hand, if you want better roads and if you want safer bridges, you don't have much choice. You have to raise the revenue from somewhere. And the argument is that a gasoline tax is a user fee. Therefore, the people who use the infrastructure, help pay for it through the gasoline tax. But you're right, our 19-cent gallon gasoline tax, there's a federal tax on top of that, mm-hmm. plus the state of Illinois and local governments impose a sales tax. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, the 19 cents a gallon is the same whether gas is $1.99 or $3.99 a gallon. The sales tax, though, as a percentage, the higher the cost of the gallon of gas, the more you pay in sales tax. So there was an argument made a few years ago, what the state ought to do is take the sales tax on gasoline and use that for infrastructure. Of course, that would be a big hit on the general revenue fund and all the other programs that we support with general funds, education, healthcare, human services, and that we'd have to find some other revenue source or make drastic cuts. But I think I would expect that there will be some kind of an infrastructure program. No, it's not going to get done in the lame duck session. It's not going to get done in January or February or March. It doesn't happen that way. Something will happen before the end of May. There'll be a program, a massive program. It'll be funded by various revenue sources and a lot of borrowing, just as occurred four or five times since I've been around watching this stuff. Mm-hmm. And what makes it palatable for lawmakers is they can go home and say, yeah, I voted to raise the booze tax. I voted to have you pay more when you get your license plate. But on the other hand, there's going to be money coming back to our district, to our community, to take care of this bridge in rural Illinois, that when the school bus comes to the bridge, the kids have to get out. The bus goes across, kids walk across, then you get back on the bus.
And Brian, why don't you take the last word on this one?
I just think we're at an interesting time as well for the gas tax as a policy matter, because cars have been trending towards getting better miles to the gallon in the last decade or so. And that was caused in part by the price in oil spike that we saw around the time of the Great Recession. People started buying more fuel-efficient vehicles. And the gas tax, whether you get, you know, as somebody else said earlier, whether you get 40 miles a gallon in your car or 10 miles a gallon in your gas-guzzling SUV, the state still only collects that same amount on each gallon. But we're also seeing, on the other hand, car companies getting out of the business of more fuel-efficient vehicles as people are moving into more of these SUVs and crossovers. So it's just a point of inflection. We've seen totally alternate proposals, such as installing devices in people's cars to track their mileage and tax them based on that. That proved to be politically hot button enough that most of the other politicians I've talked to about that have really wanted to distance themselves from that idea. But this is it's something that is going to be as cars get more efficient, it's something that will need to continue to be evaluated as to whether it's the most efficient way to fund our infrastructure.
Well, let's go now to our notes from the field. Daisy, we'll start with you.
Yes. So U.S. Senators Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth are calling on the Trump administration to keep in place the 2015 rule that sets minimum federal standards for coal ash disposal. Coal ash is the byproduct of coal burning. The senators sent a letter to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency on Friday. Recent industry reports showed coal ash disposal ponds caused unsafe pollution levels of arsenic, cobalt, and lead in groundwater wells at 22 of 24 power plant locations in Illinois.
Charlie?
Well, the state was sued again this week. Cook County's Public Guardian sued the Department of Children and Family Services, arguing that the Child Welfare Agency is causing, quote, immense harm, close quote, to mentally ill foster children, keeping them in psychiatric hospitals beyond the date that they're supposed to be medically discharged. And we're in that position because we have nowhere to put these kids. They're ready to leave the mental hospital, and there's no alternate placement for them. So they're languishing there in what the suit describes as just inhumane conditions.
All right, Heather?
Well, two observations from Rahm Emanuel's big speech this week. He was not interrupted even once for applause by aldermen, who gave him sort of a perfunctory applause at the end. And during his post-speech press conference, really the only time he showed emotion was when he was asked once if he had the clout to sort of push these proposals through either the city council or the state legislature. He said definitively that he did. But also he was asked about, you know, why he was taking aim at that constitutional requirement to protect pension benefits that we talked about earlier. And his voice for the first time sort of rose with emotion and said he was doing his best to save the pension system from itself, while others are trying to privatize that system. And I think that was an interesting glimpse into sort of both the reaction and sort of the motivation for the speech this week.
Okay. Members of our broadcast today included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and also Heather Sharon. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and find us at NPR One. Also find us at stateweek.org. If you got a question for our panel, you'll find instructions there on how to record your question and send it to us. We'll try to answer that. Production assistance provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.